Well, question. Have you ever misplaced someone? Not something, someone. I immediately think of all the parents in the room or perhaps watching online who may have misplaced a child at some point. Maybe at a shopping centre, at a park, at a basketball stadium. Anyone? No, maybe that's just me and the father of our children. I would really love to ask for a show of hands, but I don't think I want to actually incriminate anyone today. But my most recent experience of misplacing a child happened just a couple of years ago. And some of you may be wondering how that's even possible, because our children are 20 and 16, and they're not exactly small people. It was early in 2020. We were still living in Adelaide, and I woke just after 1 a.m. to discover that the hallway light was still on in our house. The master bedroom was at the very front door, and we would leave the light on until Noah came home. And the light still being on after 1 o'clock meant that Noah had not come home. Well, this sent me into a little bit of a panic. Yes, because he was not home. Yes, because this was out of character. And yes, because in South Australia, when you get your driver's license, you are in the first 12 months, you're not allowed to drive between midnight and 6 a.m. So Noah had a legal curfew. So I did what every good mother does when something goes wrong in the middle of the night, and I woke up the father. Dave! Noah's not home. Huh? Noah, he's not home, and I don't know where he is. Huh? Your son, you know, Noah, our eldest child. He's not home yet, and it's after 1 a.m. Oh, he'll be fine. No, he may not be. What should we do? Sleep? Wrong answer, try again. Call him? Okay, great. Dave, there's no answer. He's not picking up. What should I do? Just wait. He'll call back. He always does. But Dave, I don't know where he is. He'll be fine. He's out with good mates. Everything is fine. The world's fine. You're fine. Noah's fine. Everything's fine. Just go to sleep. Well, clearly, Noah is fine, was fine. And he did message me, didn't return my call. And apparently, I say, I had forgotten that he was staying at his mate's house. But I would still like to debate that I was never actually told that this was happening. And probably the father was told and I was not. And ironically now, when I contemplate all of this, Noah lives 1,300 kilometres away and I have no idea what he does any time of the day, night, or what time he gets home. But in those few moments, when my 18-year-old child was not at home, I panicked. I couldn't find him. I didn't know where he was. All I knew was he was not here. What did we hear earlier when Catherine read to us from the Bible? Do not be afraid. I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. Imagine this scene with me for just a moment. I'm sure some of you will have done this many times, but perhaps for some, this may be a new thing. Your friend, a person who you loved, admired, respected, cared for, had died and was buried. And in your grieving state, you turn up to the tomb to carry out the customs of the day, only to discover that your friend's body is not there. He's not here. Well, where is he? We know he died. We saw that happen. We know he was taken down from the cross. We know he was placed in this tomb. But where is he now? He's not here. But how is that even possible? There was a huge stone put in front of the entrance of the tomb. Don't be afraid. He has risen just as he said. Just as he said. Yes, here it is, recorded in Mark's gospel. He, that's Jesus, then began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and he must be killed and after 3 days rise again. And again, in Mark chapter 9, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. They will kill him and after 3 days he will rise. But they did not understand what this meant and were afraid to ask him about it. And a third time, just as he said, the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, spit on him, flog him, kill him. 3 days later, he will rise. 3 days later, he will rise. This was not opportunistic. This was not just another miracle. This was not a false death, e.g., Jesus was not still alive when they put him in the tomb. This was not to instill fear into his friends and followers. This was all planned. This was and still is God's redemptive plan for the whole world. But for just a minute, let me go back into the Old Testament. To Psalm 8, where we read these words that say, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them, human beings that you care for them? You made them a little lower than the angel and crowned them with glory and honour. You made them rulers over the works of your hands. You put everything under their feet." God's plan started with creation when he made people a little lower than the angel, it says. And he gave people authority over everything, made them rulers over everything. But we know that that's not how the world stayed. And when we move forward now back into the New Testament, the writer of Hebrews actually quotes this psalm in Hebrews chapter 2. And they say, "Yet for a little while you made them a little lower than the angels and crowned them with glory and honour, and you gave them authority over all things." Humanity was crowned with glory and honour and was given authority over everything. What a beautiful picture is painted in Psalm 8. But the writer of Hebrews identifies, even back then, that this is not the world that we live in. We live in a world that is broken, a world where people are hurting, where there is abuse, there's illness, there's suffering, there's pain, there's grief, and I could go on and on and on. And the beautiful picture of Psalm 8 is not the reality and is not what we see. But the writer of Hebrews has a solution and says, what we do see is Jesus, who for a little while was given a position a little lower than the angels. Jesus came as a man. And because he suffered death for us, he is now crowned with glory and honour. Yes, by God's grace, Jesus tasted death for everyone. In that death, by God's grace, Jesus fully experienced death in every person's place. We see Jesus. We see Jesus crowned with glory and honour because he suffered death. We see ultimate abuse, the ultimate degradation of the human race in the death of Christ. And he was willing to experience that. He was willing to experience that so that as a result, he might enter into that state of being crowned with glory and honour through his resurrection from the dead. Jesus suffered a horrendous death, but he was raised to life and was crowned with glory and honour. He was and still is alive. But here's the even greater news. Hebrews goes on And it says, it was only right that God, who creates and preserves all things, should make Jesus perfect through his suffering in order to bring many children to share his glory. For Jesus is the one who leads them to salvation. The them is us. Jesus is the one who leads us to salvation. Jesus is the one who can heal our broken world. Jesus is the one who brings healing, love, light, grace, joy, peace, and hope. This was and still is God's redemptive plan for the whole world. Jesus, through his suffering, was crowned with glory. And in that brings many children, brings us into a share of his glory that we might be saved and transformed. Well, just a few moments ago, we heard a remarkable story of transformation. And Shane, I want to thank you again for your vulnerability in sharing that. I was here when it was filmed. I watched it a couple of times before this morning, and every time it moves me to tears. But let me tell you a little bit about my side of my first encounter with Shane. The first thing I ever heard about Shane came from Sarah. And Shane, you'll be pleased to know that it was all good. As we heard, Shane first turned up in here on a Sunday in January. And I was on holidays. And Sarah briefly told me about this guy who'd been to church the last couple of weeks and he wanted to volunteer. I'm well aware that I sit in a very privileged position where I get to hear people's stories in great depth. And it was only a few days after we returned in January that Shane, as he said, turned up here during the week to introduce himself to me, and he handed me a stack of papers. And he said, "Here it is, you can read it." He really did throw it on the desk. We were sitting in the boardroom, and to be honest, I wondered what on earth I was walking into. Not because I had any fear or concern, but because sitting with me in the room that day was a man who was so honest and open that it was refreshing. Took the papers home that night. I don't even know if I've told Shane this, and I read some of them, and I brought them back to the office the next day, and I kept reading. I was sitting at my desk reading, and Sarah came in and said something like, "Are you still reading?" And I'm like, "Yep, I'm still reading." And without breaking any confidence of what I was reading, I said something to her like, "This is unbelievable. Like, literally, I cannot believe that who I am reading about in these court transcripts and these documents and the person that I met just a couple of days before were the same person. I'm struggling to wrap my head around this." But what I did see in that moment was Jesus. I saw Jesus because I saw transformation. I read, I'd had conversation. I'd heard Shane's story from his own lips. And what I had heard was nothing short of a miracle. I saw Jesus, the one who transforms, the one who sets us free. And you know, we don't have to have served time in prison in order to need to be set free. If you're like me, maybe you've needed to be set free from hurt and pain, from bitterness. Or maybe you've needed to be freed from addiction or abuse, or perhaps you're sitting here in this place today wondering if it's even possible that God can set you free and transform you. Well, if nothing else today, hear Shane's story and hear what I'm telling you in that God can still do that. We're so grateful to Greg Donovan, who made the image of this crown for us for the weekend. But when you look at the crown on the screen behind me as well, what do you see? Yes, see the crown of thorns, because without the crown of thorns, we cannot fully appreciate the other side. But today of all days, see the crown of glory. See Jesus who went to the cross to free you. See Jesus who can transform even the darkest into light. See Jesus who can free you from abuse and from addiction, from hurt, from pain, from bitterness. See Jesus who tasted death for everyone. See Jesus who leads us to salvation. See Jesus who is crowned with glory and honor and who willingly and lovingly shares that with you. See from his head, his hands, his feet, sorrow and love flow mingled down. Did e'er such love and sorrow meet, or thorns compose so rich a crown? And what do you do with that when you see it? Were the whole realm of nature mine, that were a present far too small? This is it. This is the gospel in a nutshell, that his love is so amazing, so divine, so transformational, that it demands our soul, our lives, and our all. Crown him with glory. And see Jesus. I'm going to invite you to join with us as we sing the words of this song, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross." And this morning, as again we work through some more of the part of the Easter story in beautiful music that's been written, if you want to come and respond today, you are welcome to do that. There are just some little cards down on the mercy seat down here that you can take that have some of those verses from Hebrews on it, that also say that today we are crowning him with glory because he died for us. He transforms our lives. He was made perfect through his suffering. And because it's him, he is the one that leads us to salvation.